Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. No Drantz today. He's traveling back to Vancouver after covering the Canucks on the latter portion of their recent road trip. I'm live from the Kintech studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. And Jason Buchla going to join us here momentarily. This text comes in unsigned. I'm afraid they're going to overplay Lankinen and he'll get hurt like Demko. He's not a starter. He's a backup. We have to get Shelovs in, right? They'll get Shelovs in at some point. The schedule sets up very nicely, though, for Lankinen to get a little bit of run here, right? They had a couple of extra days or a couple days between their last two games. They've got three days off now before they play Pittsburgh on Saturday. No back-to-backs until well into November. Now, I'm not saying that means Lankinen's going to start all of those games. And, you know, even beyond overplaying and getting injured, there's always a question with a backup as they start to take on that starter's workload. Are they able to maintain the highs that we've seen from Lankinen so far? He's going to cool down a little bit, of course. He's been fantastic to start the season. But look, they're going to get Shelovs in. They have to get him reps at some point. But in the near term, over the next week or so, I'm not concerned about overplay with Kevin Lankinen just yet. All right. As mentioned, always joins us on a Wednesday, and very, very generous of him to accommodate us a little bit here and bump it up by half an hour. He's part of Sportsnet's NHL coverage and also, of course, a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He is our guy, Jason Buchla. Books, what's going on, man?
Hey, Jay. How are you, pal? I'm always open to changing the time if we don't have to deal with Drantz.
I know, right? It's a bonus for you.
No question.
All right.
I'm joking, of course, Drantz.
Don't worry. He's not listening. He'll never hear this. It's all right. You can say whatever you want about him. He won't hear it here. I want to start with Quinn Hughes, right? And, you know, we've talked about him so much over the time that you've been coming on the show for good reason. Wins the Norris last year. He's, you know, the best player on the Canucks. And he was talking to reporters after the game, right, and said, you know, he thinks maybe he's hit a new level. Certainly his mentality off the ice or at practice, at least, he thinks has hit a new level. Are you seeing that, too, with Quinn Hughes? Because it just seems like the amount of control and influence he has over these games. And look, we're six games in. It's very early. But I kind of think he's right that it's maybe even a little bit more impressive than what we saw last season.
It does feel that way to me. I agree. The play that he made in the third period, there's certain things in his game. We're always impressed. I'm always impressed with the elite skating ability. Obviously, he's one of the most elite skaters maybe ever play the game, to be honest with you. I mean, with his agility and mobility. But the play that he made in the third period on the power play to JT Miller in the middle of the ice, that seemed like one of those plays that was taking forever to materialize. Mm-hmm. But between those two, they exposed the puck in the middle of the ice. It sat in a perfect position. Obviously, it was a slap pass for the tip goal for Besser. But my point is, when you're in that type of zone, that you're at the top like that, because he was being defended. If you look at the clip pretty closely, there was, I can't remember who was on his hip, but he was being defended. And the confidence level and the vision and the puck touch and to go with everything else, he's averaging 25 minutes a night. No big surprise there. Obviously, the bulk of his ice time comes at even strength and on the power play. I think he could kill penalties with ease, to be honest with you. He's got the brain. He's got the commitment to do that. He was plus five last night, I believe. Am I mistaken about that? Yeah, he was plus five last night.
Yeah, you might be right.
It's incredible. It's incredible. He's a special player to watch. And, you know, for comparison's sake, and obviously they're in a different position with all the injuries they have in their group in Colorado, but Cale Makar, although he's scoring more than Quinn is, his defensive statistics and the way that he's actually been hard on himself in the last week and a half with the way that he approaches the game. So it's interesting to see two-star players between the ears and how they define the state of their game early in the stages here.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, Cale Makar, he's leading the whole league in points right now, right? And from a defenseman, that's incredible. Right. So you don't want, like, I stopped short of saying it in the first segment, right? I'm not going to all of a sudden sit here and say, oh, Quinn Hughes is clearly the best defenseman in the league, right? Cale Makar has to be in that conversation. But I do think, you know, you just look at how different the Canucks are when Hughes is on the ice versus when he's off the ice. And to me, it's very similar to, you know, how different Edmonton is when Connor McDavid is on, or how different Tampa Bay is when Nikita Kucherov is on the ice, right? Like, to me, the conversation now with Quinn Hughes, it's not so much, okay, Cale Makar and Miro Heiskanen and Adam Fox. It's the guys just behind McDavid, right? It's the kind of the handful of 3, 4, 5, 6 best players in the NHL. Like, I think he's pushing himself into that conversation.
Well, I think that's fair. Absolutely. Our colleague Ian McIntyre there at Sportsnet on the left coast wrote a fantastic article today that included some of those statistics that you're talking about. Yep. And they're godly. I mean, when this guy's on the ice and what he does for the group, they're just so much better and so much more organized when he's on the ice. And listen, let's not forget about a week and a half ago when they hit the road for this road trip, and even in the Tampa Bay game, I really did feel that the group chased the game a little bit that night. They, mm-hmm. they had some fits and starts. They got better as it kind of went along there. And but since that time, everybody's started to play more organized and just, you know, presented a better version of themselves, led by Quinn Hughes. I mean, this guy's he's just fun to watch. I don't know how else to put it to you. He's worth the price of admission, which is always great for the game.
Yeah, he's been simply sensational to watch, obviously. Well, really his whole career, but especially since the start of last season and into this season. It's reached just a completely different level. Another guy who's been excellent for the Canucks in the early going here and picks up a couple of more points last night is Connor Garland. And, you know, Garland is interesting because obviously he comes over in the OEL trade, so that's kind of not ideal circumstances to be joining a new team right off the bat, given how that trade overall has turned out for the Canucks. And even when maybe there's been more criticism around him or feels like he hasn't been having that impact, his rates scoring, right? Like his per 60 or whatever has always been good, but he's just never really got that opportunity to be a consistent top six player. Now he is getting that, and the production is there to match. Is it simply a case of, okay, he's getting that opportunity that he never really got before in Vancouver, or has he kind of rounded off his game enough to earn that opportunity as well? And you know, that's why he's scoring more so far this season.
A combination of the two. I think that it's the latter more than how you described it. Mm-hmm. Connor Garland, when he came into the league, like when he played junior hockey in Moncton in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, he was exceptionally elite offensively. He barely crossed the defensive blue line. He didn't give a sniff to the defensive side of the puck, but he was outstanding offensively. So he's always had that in him. The thing with Connor Garland, if we think back to even just a year ago, if I'm not mistaken, Jay, this was a player that was sitting on the fence whether he wanted to be a member of the Vancouver Canucks. I believe there's some noise around him even a year ago that maybe this isn't where I should be. And you know, I can my agent and my management team can go in search of a trade. What he's done at 18 minutes and 23 seconds, I just looked it up on average ice time here, he's earned the trust of Rick Tocchet and his coaching staff. And good on him for doing that. I'll say something else, though. Good on for the coaching staff to bring him along. Because what's happening now is they trust him more, and they're giving him more, and he's producing more because of that. So that's a good news story. That's coaching. But it's also a buy-in from the athlete to be the best version of yourself. He's never going to be an outstanding defensive player. He's never going to be that. But he can be a dog on a bone. And, you know, he's getting a sniff a little bit on the penalty kill. He's got like 31 seconds, but it's just a sniff, right? It's just here and there. But, hey, listen, 6 points in 6 games. He's a plus player. He looks really good on the power play. He's starting on time, which I thought was awesome last night. Holy jumping. The Canucks were shot out of a cannon last night, which was great. And good for him.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think this was something Rick Tocchet was asked about, maybe even by Drancer this week. But, you know, he's playing on that line with, obviously, Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander. And you can almost see Nils Höglander in kind of a similar trajectory to Connor Garland, but like, you know, 3 or 4 years behind, right? Because he's a younger player where he obviously has a lot of offensive talent. He's a little bit undersized, and it's just a question of learning more of the defensive details, doing those things to earn the trust of the coaching staff. And, you know, I don't think it's gone to the same level for Nils Höglander, but it seems like he's taken a big step forward based on how much the coaching staff trusts him so far this year as well.
I think it's really accurate. Obviously, he prepared in the offseason. His fitness when he reported to camp was off the charts. I think he fitness tested the best at Canucks camp. And he didn't get a sniff on the power play last year. He's averaging a minute and 46 seconds this year. And again, it's part of the buy-in and the trust factor. I think that Rick Tocchet has been pushing some buttons there to the point that really coming off a really good regular season last year, on balance, this guy was a healthy scratch in the playoffs.
Yep.
He wasn't quite there in their mind when the games got to be exceptionally difficult. So good on Hollander as well. These are the types of examples, and I know people are going to get bored when we keep talking about it, but when you start towing the rope in the same direction as a team, I'm not just talking individuals, your individual impact will elevate in relation to what your skill set can provide. So when you buy in and you're a Nils Hollander and you've got the trust of your coach, you sign the new contract, you're obviously in the offseason putting in the work to get yourself in the best shape possibly to be the best version of yourself, now he's getting rewarded. And it's a good news story. Obviously that line, they're hoping to get Pettersson going offensively. He's without a tuck here through six games. Mm-hmm. But I would argue last night, I broke down his game quite religiously this morning, he was really good last night. He extended some plays. He bumped plays around the net on the power play. Obviously plays the middle bumper, kind of goes high-low there, and he's around the net. He was really solid last night in terms of the team game. So I think it's only a matter of time before he gets going here, hopefully again as well, to be the best that he can be offensively. But surrounding him with the guys that he's surrounded with on that line, that's a bonus because I think they can push him along as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen that Connor Garland has the ability to drive a line, right? And that's been a big part of why that line has had success so far. And, you know, I said something similar about Elias Pettersson. Of course, we were going to bring him up. We can't go through a whole segment here without talking about Elias Pettersson. But especially last night, but even I would say the last three games that the Canucks have won, there's been progress in the right direction. And now, like, last night is the type of game where you can really say, legitimately say, like, hey, if he plays like that, he'll be fine. The goals will come. The assists will come. Yeah. Right? Not that there's not a higher level. Of course there is. He's making 11.6. Can he be better than last night? Yes, of course he can. But he was creative. He was aggressive, right? He draws a penalty by trying to get inside. Those are all the hallmarks of what you want to see from Elias Pettersson. I do think he picks up a point as well on that Connor Garland goal. And at least now it feels like more like a normal, he's just not getting the breaks type of slump rather than a, man, his game is completely lost type of slump, which is what it was last year.
Yeah, I agree with that. Out of all the forwards, he's leading the team in ice time mm-hmm. for the forwards. He's just shy of 20 minutes a night. This coaching staff don't reward players. If you're in a slump and you're not working to get out of it to produce to your element, which is obviously you need, they want him to score. They're going to need him to score as the season goes along. That's a given, right? But if you're not doing all the rest of the things, like if your B game isn't at least complimentary enough for the group to win hockey games when you're not scoring, he wouldn't be averaging 20 minutes a night. Rick Tocchet and his coaching staff, they don't give away ice time for free. So you have to look at it from several different angles. We know what his elite element is. We know what he can potentially do offensively. He's done it in the past. But when you play the way that he played last night, certainly it's a trend that you're bang on. You're going to start to get breaks. Hard work creates breaks. You might get one that goes in the net off your rear end net front on the power play one night. You know, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that you're working and you're in the right spot. So I'd like to see him win more key faceoffs. He's below 50%, and he's got to get that bumped up a little bit, but one step at a time. And the B game has been really, really good, so it's only a matter of time before the rest of it comes into focus for him.
What do you think of the new look third line for the Canucks with Teddy Bluger, Danton Heinen, and Kiefer Sherwood? A couple of goals for Danton Heinen, and they've looked pretty dangerous over the last couple of games.
That line looks like it should stick, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the pace. I love the fact that, like, they're pit bulls. They're on it. Like, they start the game on the road in Chicago last night. And I know the Chicago Blackhawks. Listen, the Chicago Blackhawks, for all their additions that they made to that roster, they're a tire fighter defensively. I don't know what's going on half the time, but they're getting outworked and they don't know exactly where to be. But part of that is that the opponent is just plain out-competing them, and that's what that line does. I love the speed. They're hunting pucks. They're extending plays. They're all plus players. Like, you can look at that line and say that's an identity. And when I watch the Nashville Predators play right now, and I know they won last night, but when I watch them play, I'm sitting there thinking, how did Keeper Sherwood not re-sign in Nashville? Because that's exactly the speed game that they require. And I'm going to give this kid credit, too. There was many years ago he came here to play for the London Knights. I live here in London. And I wasn't sure that his skating, his mechanics, and his compete was going to get him to where he needed to go. And without those things, Jay, you can't play in the league. Like, you have to – he's not going to be a point-of-game guy, right? So you can't overlook some of his other things. He's a competitive kid who's working as hard as he possibly can every time he's tapped on the shoulder. I love that line. I hope that when Joshua comes back here, it's going to be interesting, but I hope that that they stick with that line. It looks real good to me.
Yeah, I mean, Sherwood, it's just, he's so noticeable, right? Like, the hit total jumps off, he's shooting the puck all the time. And the thing that stands out to me about that line is, look, as you said, he's not going to be a point per game guy, right? Like, we know Teddy Bluger and Danton Heinen, that's not their games as well. But they all can do just enough with the puck that they can still combine, like on that goal they scored the first goal of the game, right? There's a high enough level of ability with the puck that they're still dangerous offensively. They're not just out there, you know, throwing hits and creating energy. They're doing that, but then they have the ability to generate some you know, bottom line and some finished product as well. And I think that's something the Canucks were missing in their bottom six last year, right? With, you know, Sam Lafferty and Ilya Mikheyev, right? And just to have that little bit extra. Not that they're superstars, not that they're gonna, you know, blow your minds with plays night in, night out, but they can be legitimately dangerous offensively in addition to the identity stuff.
Well, last year, Mikheyev, we got caught up on the fact that he couldn't put the puck in the ocean for a while there, right? And he was obviously banged up to start the year and stuff like that. But absolutely, Keeper Sherwood has 42 hits in six games. That is absolutely
ridiculous.
An incredible statistic. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that, to be honest with you. But here's the thing. Imagine it this way. When you get points from these guys, like they started last night and they score in the first shift, fantastic, right? Outwork the opponent, you're starting on time, boom. As the game goes along, when your middle six guys, even your bottom, like the bottom of your lineup, when they're playing between 12 and 14, call it 15 at a high mark every night, when they play the way they play, they're wearing down opponents. So if they get a matchup with the second pairing D, let's just say, especially at home, like when the Canucks come home and, you know, Pitt comes in or whatever, and that line rolls over the boards to play against the Letangs or the Carlsons, those kinds of guys, they will wear them down into submission. And what does that do? If they don't score necessarily on their shift, the next time that D rolls over the boards to play or to take their next shift, they're facing the Besser line and the Miller line. And you know what? They're just down a little bit further on the notch. They're exhausted because they just got worn out a minute and a half ago. They haven't rebounded from that Bluger line shift yet. And that's where the value of people like this lies when you're playing the team game. And come playoffs, I'm with you. They started to, that was one of the outliers. I feel it was an outlier. When the team got deeper in the playoffs last year, it was like, just not quite there. There's just not quite enough depth there.
Yep.
This feels better to me.
Yeah, it looks good in the early going, no doubt about it. On the maybe more of the concern side of things for the Canucks, I mean, I don't think, you know, looking at this roster before the season, a lot of us pointed at the defensemen beyond Quinn Hughes and Filip Pronik, and you like the size, you like the toughness, the defensive ability, but would there be enough puck moving? And, you know, I think it's fair to say that has played out in the early part of the season, and especially that second pair of Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers. I think, you know, I was pretty interested to see what Carson Soucy could do in that role this year. It hasn't been a great start. Obviously, you know, those individual players can play better, but are there things from a team perspective that, you know, either tactical things the coaches can do or ways the forwards can help out to kind of mitigate some of the problems moving the puck that the other four defensemen have had so far?
Curious. They want to play a certain style as a group. So as a five-man unit, and you know, every guy that pulls on the jersey, the team wants to play a certain way. So I'm not so sure that the group can make adjustments for those guys. I think those guys have got to figure it out, how they can adjust and, you know, move pucks quicker, read and react a little bit quicker. Myers' low water mark so far for this season, I believe his 1,000th game was that Tampa Bay game, the poor guy. And that was his worst game for me. Like he got caught puck watching. And when you're that big, obviously, if you don't have the stick, you don't have the man, you're like, buddy, you know, something has to happen here. But to your point, moving pucks, getting there, using your length, all those types of things, they have to figure it out. I actually think that since Brännström has entered into the fray here a little bit, that they look a little bit more – They look better as a unit of six. We already know what the star power is. We know what Hronek and Hughes do, but they look better. Like, they look quicker. They look like they're moving things. And Branch has even killed a few penalties, which is that's fantastic news for Vancouver. I don't know that he can do that long term when the games get really hard. Mm-hmm. I hope he can, but you know. But for those other two guys, they're veteran players, Jay. They've got to figure it out on their own. You know, they're minuses. They're logging, you know, pretty big minutes. Susie's right up around 20 minutes, and obviously they're key cogs in the penalty kill. It'll take some time maybe for those two guys to get going a little bit better, but it's not so much what we can do as a team. It's they have to adjust because the engine's starting to roll here, and it's up to you to make the adjustments.
Jason, appreciate again you accommodating us, and as a bonus, you didn't have to chat with Drans. He'll be back for the next time you're on the show. Thanks for doing this as always, man.
It's great, man. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for having me on, Jay.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. That is Jason Bukla, Sportsnet NHL analyst and a former director of amateur scouting with his take on the Canucks. And as he said, starting to roll a little bit here. Three straight wins now, of course, after going winless in their first three games of the season. Landon Ferraro is going to join me in studio for the final hour of the show coming up in a few minutes here. 650-650, though, before we take a break, I'll dive back into the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this one comes in that Brännström could be a good fit with Susie on the second pairing. That's a huge minutes load to put on a guy like Erik Brännström, right? Who was not really in their NHL plans even a couple of weeks ago. And yes, he's looked good on a third pair with Vincent Desharnais. But again, you know, Drans compared him to Mark Friedman last year, right? Mark Friedman came up, played really well for a stretch of games, and then wasn't a regular for the team again after that. That could be what we're looking at here with Erik Brännström. If he was right-handed, identical attributes, but right-handed, I'd say I'd be open at least to giving it a shot. And you'd probably still have to manage the pairings a little bit and move guys around. But if he was right-handed, I'd be like, okay, maybe you can try it. I don't think they're going to put two lefties, especially one who's undersized, who has defensive question marks, on the second pairing. And again, when Derek Forbort comes back, and you know, I hope his personal reasons for leaving the team get sorted out, and he's back with the team very soon. But I don't know if there's a way to really easily fit both Derek Forbort and Erik Brännström into the lineup at the same time. I don't know if Erik Brännström also is going to be the long-term solution to the puck-moving flaws beyond Hughes and Hronek on this team's blue line. I think it's going to be very difficult for Erik Brännström to pull off. Again, I like that he's an option. I like what he's given them. But realistically, unless Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers and Vincent Desharnais and Derek Forbort, I actually didn't think Forbort was... I thought he was pretty good when he was in the lineup for the Canucks, but unless those guys elevate their play significantly, I think long-term, the solution is probably not in the organization right now, right? The solution is probably external, going out, bringing somebody in who can fit into your lineup smoothly, right? Without having to do a bunch of gymnastics to get them in the lineup and also give you that puck-moving boost that they need. Rich in Cloverdale texts in, hey, Jamie, with the Bluger line playing like last year's third line, is there an opportunity for Joshua to join Petey and Garland in the top six? That allows Hoglander to contribute to an already strong fourth line. Thoughts? That's from Rich in Cloverdale. Yeah, speaking of tough decisions to make, right, when Dakota Joshua is good to go, and we heard the report yesterday from Frank Saravelli, 1 to 2 weeks, so that's only, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 additional games here before Dakota Joshua is back in the lineup, or at least that's what it sounds like, and hopefully that's the case. That's going to be a tough decision. Now, I would lean with the way that both of those lines are playing, the Pettersson and the Bluger lines right now, I would lean to keeping them together, at least for game one of Joshua, maybe the first couple of games, easing him back in more of a fourth line role. Because here's the thing, it's not like the fourth line is a joke right now, right? It's Pugh Suter centering it. Pugh Suter's a good player. He was playing first line minutes for the team last year. So that's still a line you can put out there if it has a chance to do something that you can rely on for a decent chunk of minutes. It's not like you're exiling Dakota Joshua to a line that's going to play 6 minutes a night if you put him on the fourth line. Now, beyond that, obviously, you signed Dakota Joshua to a big contract. He could have scored 20 goals last year. He's got all this stuff going for him. You're going to have to carve out a bigger role for him. Whether that's back with Connor Garland and Elias Pettersson, that's very interesting. Does he bump someone like Danton Heinen on the third line or Kiefer Sherwood and slot in there next to Teddy Bluger? Either way, a pretty good player who's having a pretty good season so far, whether it's Sherwood, Heinen, Hoglander, somebody's going to end up playing on that fourth line. That's going to be a tough blow for that player, but that's a pretty good position for the Canucks to be in as well. 650-650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Landon Ferraro is going to join me next here for a full hour again in studio. Had a blast doing this on Friday. Stoked to do it again here. If you got questions for Landon, send them in. 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd, and very pleased now to be joined in studio once again for the final hour of the show. Regular contributor here on 650 on TV, former NHL player he is, Landon Ferraro. What's going on, man?
Not much. You're stuck with me again.
No, absolutely not. I'm thrilled, thrilled to have you back in studio for this one. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So we've been lucky both times we've done this, Landon. We're coming on day after the Canucks win. So lots of fun stuff to get into. And, you know, I'm sure we'll do some nitpicking and all of that at some point in the final hour here. But just overall, you know, I said earlier, like, that wasn't a perfect game by the Canucks. They made some mistakes. They had some defensive breakdowns. We can talk about all that. Rick Tocchet mentioned it. But it was also the kind of game where there was no doubt who the much more talented team was, right? Like, it was like, you watch that game, you're like, yeah, they're way better than Chicago. That's pretty much the long and the short of it.
Yeah, like, was it the cleanest win ever? No.
Nope.
But was it a very good win at the end of a tough road trip while coming off a not great start? Like, it went about as good as they could have wanted it from the outset. You know, they were fast. They were clean for the most part. You know, a lot of players on, you know, I'll say on the bottom half of the roster, you know, I thought had really good nights, really made some good steps for themselves. You know, I think it was a really good road effort.
How important that first goal, right? 20 seconds into the game, and it's, you know, you think of the situation, right? Last game of a road trip, a team you're supposed to be better than, and you want it to be as professional and smooth as possible. How much does it help getting that early goal, right? Jumping on them right away.
Huge. I mean, it just makes you feel comfortable right away, but not comfortable, okay, we can sit back, but like, okay, we're rolling, we can keep going, it's fine. The scary thing with road trips, especially, you know, the last game of a trip, you're kind of excited to get home, get back into your own bed, and playing a team that is weaker than you on paper, is you start out okay, and then they get a quick one themselves, and you're sitting there, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a lot harder than we thought. That's when it's tough to come back. They started out pretty good.
Yeah, and it was, you know, you mentioned the depth players for the team. A lot of them having a good night, and it was the depth that started, right? You know, they get the chance to be out there first, and it's the Teddy Bluger, Danton Heinen, Kiefer Sherwood line that does it. And, you know, it was pretty funny, right? Like, the players talking after the game, and Kiefer Sherwood saying, you know, I probably should have shot that. Then he passes to Teddy Bluger. He's got a wide open net. He's like, no, I'm going to pass this one, too. And all of a sudden, it's this beautiful tic-tac-toe goal from your third line, Danton Heinen putting it in. And, you know, that third line seems to have really found some chemistry here in the early going, and it almost just feels like there, like, you look at that passing play, it's not your typical bottom six passing play, but it feels like maybe when the team is rolling, it's almost contagious, right? To start trying things like that, the confidence level gets raised, and then, you know, all of a sudden Kiefer Sherwood and Teddy Bluger are making plays like that.
Yeah, like, you know, Sherwood gets his first one the night before, the game before, so, you know, he's already feeling pretty good, especially because he's had a good start. Bluger's had the best start that you could imagine for him and for himself. So, like, there's two players playing with confidence already. And then you add in Danton Heinen, who's, you know, he's almost kind of been the forgotten new addition brought in because there's been so much focus on DeBrusque and, well, just everything on Pettersson. Everyone's been so focused that way that you kind of forget that Heinen's been here. And, like, those are the types of goals I expect him to score. I don't mean the tic-tac-toe.
Sure.
I mean the right around the net. You don't, I don't mean this in a mean way. I, like, you don't really see him at all, and then all of a sudden he's just in the right spot. And that's whether he's scoring or on the defensive side of the puck, like, he never gets himself in spots where he's in trouble to where you see him really flailing trying to make a defensive play. So you just, you don't really notice him. And for a team that has had the start that they had, now that they're starting to kind of figure it out, like, that's what you want out of your bottom six, is no surprises. They're going to play the right way. And, I mean, you know, Sherwood had 10 hits again. Like, eventually he's going to probably have to bring that down to six.
You'd think he's going to have, like, a five-hit game at some point. It's been ridiculous to start the season so far.
Like, he's had two 10-game or two 10-hit games.
Yeah.
Like, my body would be in seven pieces at that point. But, you know, like, he's direct. He's simple with the puck. But he, you know, last night, like, he knew where he was going with those plays. Like, there wasn't any decision to be made. Like, he's playing confident. That line just is simple. They're north. They play hard. It's what you want.
Well, and he had the presence of mind on that. Looked like it was maybe offside, but wasn't goal, right? To tag up. And now he said after the game, like, it wasn't necessarily that he was thinking it through all the specifics in real time. It was more just instinct, like, hey, I better tag up just in case this is onside. As a former hockey player, what do you, like, does that play make sense to you? Are you, is that something that you would be able to process kind of in real time, that version of the rule?
I don't want to say yes, because I would look at it differently. I would know that my stick and the puck are on the outside of the blue line and my feet are on the inside. So I better get my feet all the way in, but I probably would have brought everything back out.
Right.
I wouldn't have thought as soon as my feet start touching the blue to tap the puck, don't carry it over. You buy yourself an extra half second. Now he gets onside. Like, that was all that comes to mind is, like, Alan from The Hangover when he's sitting at the blackjack table and all the numbers are flying around his head and everything. Like, if that's what was going on in Sherwood's head coming through, I mean, it's impressive.
I mean, I guess it's just good instincts, right? It's like, just, I might as well take up. Who knows what's going to happen, but at least we'll have a chance then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's such a weird play. I mean, I do got to give a shout-out to Shorty. You know, he's like immediately on it. It's like, this is what the rule is. This is how it's going to, this one should stand. So credit to Shorthouse for figuring that one out on the fly. Okay. I want to get into a bit of a conversation here about Quinn Hughes, right? Because look, obviously, like, Quinn Hughes has been awesome ever since he came into the league, right? He wins the Norris last year. And, you know, I'm always so wary of, even with great players, right? You have a career year. It's really hard to then take another step forward. That's so difficult, right? Like, even if Quinn Hughes just maintained what he was doing last year, he'd be this phenomenal, valuable player. And yet in the early going, you know, maybe the offensive numbers aren't quite there where they were at the rate last season, but he's the best player on the ice every night, pretty much. And, you know, I thought it was really interesting to hear him after the game yesterday say, he thinks his mentality has gotten better, right? He's more focused on winning. He's more focused on his overall game. Rick Tocchet's comparing him to Sidney Crosby, which is obviously incredibly high praise, just in, you know, not in terms of how good they are necessarily, but that mentality, right? Chasing perfection is the phrase that Rick Tocchet used. I mean, like, what stands out to you watching Quinn Hughes through these first six games so far?
I would say he's, at the beginning of the season, you know, the first couple games, to me, he looked not quite settled in yet and trying to do everything all at once for everyone. Like, it looked like a leader that was not happy with how he himself and the team was playing and was trying to fix everyone's problems. And, you know, through the last few here, he's, you know, he's settled in, but, like, to your point, he's not taking these, not that he did before, but, like, he's not taking these crazy chances trying to get his numbers. And you listen to him talk and just, you know, hearing things about him through other people and everything that we've found out over the years, like, not just him, like, it's the whole family. Like, they're serious about their hockey. They want to be players that are remembered. And I don't mean that in a sense that, you know, Quinn has a huge ego and but like, they want to cement themselves in here because they know they're that good and they have that type of mentality. You know, to me, it just brings me back to, you know, the story of Steve Yzerman, who's putting up massive numbers his first couple of years. And then Scotty Bowman comes in and says, okay, you can keep scoring or we can win. Like, I need you to be a different type of player. And, you know, I'm not sure if that conversation's happened with Tocchet, but it sounds like Quinn had it with himself and said, I don't really care if I get points, what happens. Yeah. I want to win a Stanley Cup. Like, that's what I'm going for.
And I'm just fascinated to think, you know, I thought, look, we're on the outside, right? So trying to evaluate what Quinn Hughes is doing as a captain, that's obviously really, really difficult. But from the outside looking in, it felt like he really embraced the role last year and was a really good captain for the team. Obviously, the results were fantastic. You see his mentality. I'm just so curious for the rest of the team to see Quinn Hughes, who was already phenomenal last season, wins the Norris, for him to be so kind of publicly unsatisfied and say, no, I need to do more. I need to get better. That must have an incredible impact on the rest of the team. And I know you've been around players like, you know, Datsyuk and Zetterberg in Detroit, and obviously Bergeron in Boston, like great leaders of really good teams. But the impact to see Quinn Hughes be so unsatisfied, if you are, you know, not just the guys at the bottom of the roster, but even like the other top players, right? Like JT Miller, Pettersson, Besser, that must be really inspiring for them to see from Quinn Hughes.
Inspiring, and the part that sticks out to me as you're talking right there is the amount of guys that had career years last year on this team. And like, it is very easy to go back to summer and think, well, I'll just do the same.
I figured it out. Yeah. I cracked the code. Hey, here we go. I'm just going to go out and do that again next year. Right. Yeah.
And it's not that easy. You could literally do the exact same minute for minute, rep for rep, workouts, skates all through the summer. You're not going to have the same results. Like, you need to be constantly improving, talking to new people, trying to bring new things in. You know, maybe you had a really tough year in the sense of big minutes, you're tired, you had a long run. Well, you can't go at it the same as a guy that missed playoffs completely. Like, you have to back off while still trying to strengthen. You know, like, there's so many things that could have made this team come in and be satisfied with the step that they took. But that step means nothing if you're looking at the top step. And that's what this team really feels like it does.
Well, and I wonder, too, with Quinn Hughes specifically, if the fact that, you know, as you said, look, obviously Patrick Alvin after last season comes out and says, like, we're not satisfied. We only made the second round here, right? We've got a long way to go. And I even look at Quinn Hughes specifically, and he was good in the playoffs, but he wasn't dominant. And I do wonder if, okay, I had this incredible season, but I didn't do everything I could possibly do to help my team in the playoffs. If that, like, that must be a huge motivator for even incredible players like Quinn Hughes going into the summer, right? If he, not that he was terrible or anything like that, but just, I wasn't quite at my peak. I wonder if that gives the little extra spark to go and put that work in the summer.
Yeah, and I don't think it's much different than the conversation we had last week with him talking about his shots getting through.
Yes.
Like, he's not just going to keep throwing them and hoping they get through. Like, he came back that next game, and I think he had 9 shots on net.
Yep.
And, like, that's a clear indication that he put a lot of thought into what was happening. He watched video, tried to figure out where the openings were. If he stepped one more time, maybe it opens him up, things like that. And you have, with Quinn, like, you have someone that wants to win, and the play that sticks out to me last night, and I think this is exactly what we're talking about here with him, is he can try and do it himself. And when playoff time came last year, you know, they're marking you a lot closer.
Yes.
Teams are, you know, they know what's going on. It's not just a one-off come in on a Tuesday night. And coming into this year, you have him starting to move the puck across the blue line a little more instead of trying to take it. Like, he throws that one across to Hronek last night. I didn't even really know that he could do a spin move like that and really jump down the wall,
yep.
makes another move, and then throws it, I think it was Hoglander, in front for yep. a really good chance. Like, if Quinn can start bringing in his partner into some of that, well, now that's going to open him up, because they got to worry about the D diving down on both sides of the ice now. So it's just trying to bring in other players to open yourself up as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I actually thought, I thought Filip Hronek had his best game of the year.
Yeah.
Like, you could see it's not just, oh, he's on a pair with Quinn Hughes and that's why he's picking up assists, or that's why he's dangerous offensively. Like, he was making plays, right? He gets a couple, you know, I don't think he got an assist on the first goal, but a really nice play to keep it in at the blue line, make a sharp pass down low. And then obviously the one where he sets up Dan Heinen. And, you know, the point about Quinn Hughes and the shooting, I said this earlier in the show, but just by shot attempts, so not ones that have hit the goal, but they've been blocked or missed or whatever, but total shot attempts, he has 57 through six games. Next closest guys are Besser and Garland with 29. So he's almost doubling them up. And yet he also leads the team in assists, right? So it's like, he's their most common shooting threat. He's their most common setup threat. Like, he's everything almost for this team's offense right now.
Yeah. And the crazy part in hearing that, so that's through six games.
Yeah.
We won't even double it, put him to four games. So that, you know, we're just under 100 shot attempts now.
Yep. Like,
that's some guys' attempts for an entire season from the back end. Like, that's the part when you put it into perspective a bit of, like, how much the puck is on his tape and how good he is at finding a lane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a forward, you end up at the top sometimes. You know, a D goes into the play, goes down low trying to hold a puck in, you're covering for him. And you always get mad when D, like, you're battling in front, you're just getting buried with cross checks, and the puck goes into the forward in front of you because it's a little wrist.
Right.
You're like, what are we doing? Like, just get it through.
Give me a chance to make a play.
Yeah. Like, just let me at least have a chance to touch the puck. And then you get yourself up there. Like, with someone coming out at you, there's a reason that even NHL defensemen struggle to get pucks through. Like, it is a very hard thing to just miss the first guy and still get it through.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's pretty impressive as you were saying, right? We're seeing the shoot first mentality from Quinn Hughes, and yet he's also doing a lot to get his teammates involved. And I always think it's such especially for a defenseman like Quinn Hughes, who his shot has improved a lot, but he's still not a better shooter than, you know, JT Miller or Brock Besser or anything. There's such a fine line between, okay, I want to be more dangerous shooting, and do sometimes, like, you almost go too far, and then instead of passing to the forwards, you're taking shots that aren't great. But right now, he's threading that needle, right? Like, he's dramatically increased how much he's shooting. It's helped him be more dangerous, but it's not like he's passing up great passing opportunities as well. He's still getting his teammates involved.
Yeah, and I mean, that just goes to the hockey IQ mm-hmm. of Quinn Hughes. And again, there's a reason that we don't see 15 of him flying around the league,
indeed.
Right? Like, there's so many guys, and I would, like, the vast majority of the guys are, like, you get locked into what your thing is. Like, if you're a shooter, you don't even end up looking for the pass sometimes, especially if you're in a bit of a drought yourself. You're like, mm-hmm. well, I can't pass up anything. Like, I need to shoot. And when you have, you know, I'll use the presence of mind. I always try and find a different one than that one.
It works.
I know, and it's too
just
good.
Just
it's
stay just with
too
what works.
Good.
The wherewithal.
The wherewithal.
That's another
I'll go
one?
With that one.
Right,
that one's. I like that one better. You know, but he has the wherewithal to where he's looking at the net, like he sees his shooting lane, but his peripherals, like he's seeing, you know, call it 30 degrees more of the ice than I would up there, right? Like, my focus is zeroes in closer to the net. Like, he's looking at the net and he can still see where his guys are. And that's where he can have those little fakes and then lay it off without looking. Like, he's already made his scan. He sees more of the ice than the majority of guys.
You know, sometimes it gets tricky, you know, doing rankings or is this guy better than this guy or anything like that. But I am really struck just when I watch Quinn Hughes now, it feels very similar, the effect he has on the team, to the effect Nathan MacKinnon has on the Avs, or even, like, honestly, a little bit the effect Connor McDavid has on the Oilers. I'm not saying he's as good as Connor McDavid. No one is, right? We all understand that, but he's almost gone beyond just the, oh, he's one of the best defensemen in the league, to he's one of the best players in the league. Like, really, he's one of the maybe five or six guys that I think you could put in that conversation, certainly behind Connor McDavid at number one. And we don't tend to think of defensemen in those terms so often, right? They don't get a lot of Hart Trophy love, but I don't think there's another defenseman who their team revolves around him as much as this team revolves around Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, I mean, Makar to a level, but yep. At the same time, I would say, like, Makar and MacKinnon are, like, they're almost a pair.
Yep.
Like, they're a running mate out there.
Yep.
So it makes it a little different, but, you know, with Quinn, he has an ability within himself where, and it's harder for a D to do this, but he has an ability to rise to an occasion. Mm. Like his slapper goal off the draw the other night, like, that gets blocked, and then you can almost just see it, and before he even makes contact, you're like, this is either going in or it's a really good chance. Like, he just knows when he's needed to make a play
mm-hmm.
and kind of get the bench back the right way and move it. Like, you know, for the Canucks, to me, it's him and Miller that when things aren't going right, you're looking to Quinn on the back end, to Miller up front.
Yep.
And, like, those are going to be the guys that pull the team out of, you know, the bit of quicksand when it happens.
And you already think a couple times in this season, those guys combining to earn the team points, right? Like the one against Calgary where Quinn Hughes sets up Miller for the slapper that gets them to overtime. In Florida, Quinn Hughes sets up Miller for the overtime winner, right? So it's like already you're seeing tangible extra points in the standings because of those guys stepping up in those big moments. Okay, there's lots more I do want to get into, you know, Pettersson, the power play, Connor Garland, all of that stuff. But a few minutes here before we take a break. So we mentioned it off the top. Rick Tocchet spoke about it last night. The defensive side of things still not where the Canucks want it, despite three wins in a row now. One of those a shutout win in Philly, but Lankinen has been really, really solid through three games. And, you know, the phrase Tocchet is using right a lot, we're not protecting the guts of the ice enough. And, yeah, I think there's been a lot of defensive breakdowns. You also look, or a fair number, I shouldn't say necessarily a lot, right? It's not as if they've been horrible defensively. You know, you look at a play last night like the Taylor Hall goal as well, where it kind of skips over Tyler Myers' stick, and then all of a sudden it's right on Taylor Hall's stick. So there's obviously another level they can get to. What do you chalk up the kind of, I don't want to say bad or anything, but just not where it needs to be defensive performance? Like, what's driving it in your view through six games?
The majority of it to me is, like, it's generally not rush, like off the rush. Like, they've been doing a pretty good job yep. for the most part off of that. Like, it's when you have sustained pressure in your own end that, you know, they hold everything to the outside. You know, if they're in there for 35 seconds, call it, like, they hold everything to the outside for 25 of that. And then out of nowhere, someone pops it open in the slot mm-hmm. and is like a grade A chance. Like, there's about 16 minutes left in the third last night. Bedard had it behind the net. Everything kind of got moving. And you could just see, I think it was Myers jumped out to the corner to help Besser. Yep. So they had double up there. And out of that, we lost the slot. And Foligno takes a one-timer from 3 feet above the crease, and Lankinen has to make an unbelievable save on it. Like, that's the example I would use. Like, everything is okay, and then it's almost like they get lulled to sleep for a half second, and someone pops into that opening.
Yeah. So it's just a focus?
I think it's a bit of focus, and just a bit of not trying to jump in too quick to mm-hmm. help. Right? Like, I understand when you have someone in a vulnerable spot, like your teammates pressuring them, and you see maybe I can jump in there and we can cut them off here. But in doing that, like, you need to know you're getting the puck. At worst, it's staying in a battle at your feet.
Right.
You can't go launching out trying to help someone and then it gets past you. Well, now you've tried helping.
Yes.
And you just made the situation
worse. You made it much worse.
Right? So, like, just not getting too excited in the D zone to help. Like, they're not making mistakes out of being lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, if anything, it's being over aggressive, trying to help and end the play quick.
Okay, I'm about to ask what potentially could be a very stupid question here, okay? But this is how I'll phrase it. For NHL players, how much of a difference does practice time make? Because with the defensive side of things, right? We've heard from the beginning of the regular season, Rick Tocchet say, you know, we didn't focus on that side of things much during preseason, during the training camp. That he's put that on him a little bit. They were really focused on generating more off the rush. And, you know, now I look at it, they've got these 3 days off. They're practicing right now. You know, probably have Thursday off, then practice Friday. And I imagine there's going to be a lot of defensive focus, right, from Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff in these couple of practices before Saturday's game. For an NHL team, all right, you've got, let's say, two practices before a game. Your coaching staff really zeroes in on one thing. Like, how likely is that to make you do that one thing better in the next game if you've got that practice time in an NHL season?
If you have a good coach and a team that listens, it'll show up the very next game,
yeah.
Right? Like, you have, in Vancouver here, you have not just Tocchet, but a very good coaching staff across the board. And then on top of it, you have a team filled with Hughes and Miller,
yes.
The guy, like all these guys we're talking about, they will be focused. And that's all you think about for those couple days is where you're standing in a different spot. So by the time it gets to the game, whether you wanted to pick up the stuff or not, it's just kind of been beaten into your head and and you end up just being there. And that's how good defensive play works, is you're not thinking, you're just doing.
Mm. Yeah, and that, to put your point about focus, right? Once it's instinct, then you're less likely to lose focus because, as you say, you're not so much thinking. You're just out there doing what you know you need to do. Okay, we're going to take a break here. One more segment coming up. As I mentioned, we'll talk a little bit about Pettersson. I want to get into the power play, which scored a couple of times last night as well. You can send your thoughts in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Landon Ferraro in studio here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here in studio with Canucks analyst for Sportsnet, Landon Ferraro, in person for the full hour here to wrap up the show. Drancer's traveling today. He'll be back on the show tomorrow. We'll do the crossover with Donnie and Dolly tomorrow as well so that we can have the full crew in for the crossover. We're live from the Kintech studio here, 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. And I did want to read this text. We were talking about Quinn Hughes and how he's doing it all for the Canucks. Gurdeep sends this one in. Quinn is everything for the Canucks, defensively, offensively, but also scouting. He's the player that asked management to bring in Kiefer Sherwood to the Canucks after all. So his rep as a pro scout is growing as well, Quinn Hughes, because that's working out pretty well so far.
Well, when you get, I don't know the number, but when you get hit, call it, so it was, how many games?
Six game
six.
Series, yeah.
So call that 87 hits by Sherwood. So 40 yeah. of them were on Hughes. So that makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah, it leaves an impression.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, this guy
literally
I
leaves an impression.
Don't
want
to play him again. Get him on our team. Get him involved doing that for us instead of against us. And hey, paying dividends for the Canucks and Quinn Hughes so far. Keep your texts coming in, 650, 650. So something that you and I spent a fair amount of time talking about last week on the show when you were in studio, and that I think it's generated a lot of conversation here in Vancouver in the early going, is the Canucks power play and just the way it's looked off. You use the word slow, right? Just everything about it looks slow. They get a couple of goals last night, including a really lovely one from Brock Besser, set up by Quinn Hughes and JT Miller, which we can talk about a bit in a second. But I did just think, and I don't know if it was as simple as, okay, we put Connor Garland, everyone's in a little bit of a different position now, and guys are just out of their comfort zone, and that was a bit of a spark, but it did look like there was a lot more speed from the first power play unit, a lot more quickness than we'd seen leading into that game.
I'd agree for sure. I think one thing that you can't overlook when a change is made on a power play, you know, in this case, it's Garland coming yep. on, is the other four guys sitting there listening to each other and realizing, if we don't figure this out, it's probably going to happen to us too.
Mm.
And like, that's a bit of a, you know, a kick in the shins a bit as well, in the sense of, okay, we haven't done our job yet, and now one of our guys is taking that pain for us because we haven't done it.
Yep.
So DeBrusk goes out and from no fault of his own, but, you know, so they get Garland in and they got moving pretty quick on it. Like they were a bit more direct. Mm-hmm. You know, the first goal, Miller's goal, I really liked that they had some pretty quick puck movement, but then it wasn't a purposeful shot tip or trying anything fancy. Like it was a hard slapper from Quinn that tips off Mrazek's glove, goes off the end board, and Miller doesn't even try to settle it. Like he just hammers that thing in. Like it looked like a very determined power play, which was a nice change.
And you always hear, right, when your power play is struggling, you almost need something like that to go your way. But you have to have the mentality. As you said, he looks determined. He knows exactly what he's doing. He almost sees it developing like, hey, this is the break we need. I'm going to make it count. You know, I'm going to give us that confidence by converting on this break. And, you know, it's a really interesting point about the kind of just the message sent by doing even just one tweak. Right. And it's a new guy. It's Jake DeBrusk. It's not like it's, you know, Elias Pettersson or JT Miller or something being bumped off the power play, but just the little kick in the pants, you know, from the coaching staff to say like, hey, guys, this isn't good enough. We don't want to have to make more changes. You guys have the talent available, but we got to do something because this isn't working.
Yeah. And I think if, you know, one of the, I don't know if I'm sure you've seen it now on NHL.com, like you go into the box score, like they have those simulations now, like it is awesome to
watch. I love those. They're fantastic.
And like, just if you're kicking around or whatever, like go on there and watch Miller's goal. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing that comes out of that is their power play hasn't been working. You need to shoot. You need to do it. There's two ways you go about that. One is you get the puck and you just shoot everything blindly with no real cause other than we need to shoot pucks. Mm-hmm. Or you get it into your heads of, yes, we need to shoot pucks, but we need to know when that shot's coming and we need to be crashing the net. Like Garland's standing on the other half, on the top of the other circle. And as soon as that puck's about to get shot, like he's already diving in. Miller's going back to the net.
Yeah.
Like everyone's converging on the net. Like that is a shot mentality power play that has a real purpose of, okay, Quinn's going to do his job and get that puck through, but we need to get to the net and make sure that our four are outnumbering the two or three that are down there and coming up with that puck.
Well, and one thing I thought that was interesting that I think on both power play goals, doesn't pick up a point, but Elias Pettersson's right in front of the net and it feels like they moved him. We're so used to seeing him in that one-timer spot, right? And you go back a few years and he was scoring from there. Hasn't really been a successful play for a while now for the Canucks setting him up. And, you know, the thing about Elias Pettersson, he's got such good hands and he can make some of those little plays around the net. Like even the even strength goal he sets up for Connor Garland, right? He's right in front of the net and just a little shovel over to Garland. And a bit of an interesting shift to, and I wonder if it's also trying to get him going, putting him around the net to maybe get a deflection, maybe one bounces off him, something like that, right? But a skill set that I don't know that we always think about Elias Pettersson having, but you know, if he's willing to go there, he's willing to do the dirty work. Like, that's a pretty good spot for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, the first power play goal, he's in front of the net. He does a little flash screen, which helps Mrazek miss that puck. So, like, that's a pretty big part of that, too. Maybe if he's not going through, none of that happens anyway. But more specifically on Besser's goal, the last power play goal for them, like, Pettersson is playing that position in front of the net like he was born to do it. Like Mrazek could not see a single thing past him. Like the shot pass from Miller to Besser, honestly, even if Mrazek sees it, I don't know if he's getting that. That thing came with so much pace and you just weren't really expecting it. But with Pettersson there, like he's been given a more simple job, it appears to, as he's standing in front of the net, but at the same time, you still have to be willing to go do it and stand there. Like, he's taking some cross checks. He's probably going to get hit with a puck if you're standing there. Like, you have to be willing to put yourself in that position. And he did it for both those. And, like, the play you brought up on Garland's, like, you know, he wasn't going to make that pass, but he's all of a sudden now putting his shoulder down and driving the net, trying to find it. Like, his energy and everything just seems to have kind of turned a leaf, and it was a, I thought it was a pretty good game for him.
Before we get more into Elias Pettersson, just still on the power play, because I know, I mean, we were all impressed, but I know that the setup, Quinn Hughes and JT Miller combining, and the drop pass from Quinn Hughes, and then JT Miller takes it, like, that's two players operating at an extraordinarily high level to create that slap pass then, or that shot pass for Brock Besser.
Yeah, like, you know, hockey's funny. Like, you have set plays and you have these things, but it's not basketball or football where it's you run this route, you do this, you hold your pick here, whatever it might be. Like hockey, you talk more in generalizations, like, okay, this is what we're going to try and set up.
Concepts, kind
of, right? Yeah. Like, we don't know what the other team's going to do. You just got to kind of ad lib it as you go, but you have a general plan. That play last night had, what, a millimeter of of space left on it? Like, they had to trust each other. One, Miller, as he's coming over top, like, he has to trust that Quinn's going to make the play if it's there, and he's going to hold on to it. If not, he's not going to get put in a bad position being the last guy back. But even scarier to me watching it is Quinn with the puck, to be able to drop that puck there knowing you're the last guy back at the, like, at that moment is scary, right? Like, at least from a, from guys that don't play the top of the point on a very good power play. But, like, you got to trust each other immensely. And the fact that it works, it stays on side, and you could see Miller had no other vision in his eyes other than this is going hard off Besser's tape. Like, it's either going in or we're creating another rebound, and I've already got all my speed to come down there and help you. Like, again, very fancy play, but at the end of it, it's very simple in the sense of a puck's going to the net with bodies going to the net. Like, that, that needs to be the kind of the be-all, end-all of everything on a power play. Is doesn't matter what plays you're making in front of it, you need bodies at the net.
Yeah. And the thing I liked about that, and I talked about, you know, Elias Pettersson going into the middle of the ice, playing in front of the net. Obviously, that's a new position for him. And, you know, I think when the power play has started to struggle and you start to think of, okay, how can you move the chess pieces around, right? And you look at it and you think, okay, JT Miller on that side, when he can skate downhill and pick the corner of the wrist shot, he's so good at that. How do you move him? But the thing is, he's just such a good player generally. Like, you put him in a different spot, he's going to find a way to be effective there, you know? And I thought it was, I loved how it opened up, having him on that side of the ice opened up new ways for him to combine with Quinn Hughes, you know, scores the goal at the side of the net. It's just a good reminder that, yeah, he's really good at that one element of the power play that we've seen him be so effective at, but he's such a smart, talented player. You put him pretty much anywhere on the power play, he's going to figure out a way to produce and be effective.
And I think this is a bit of the same conversation as, you know, a forward's not just a right wing anymore. Like, you need, you don't need to, but you are very much helping yourself if you can play center and wing.
Yep.
Now you've opened up 12 spots instead of four, right? Like, it's kind of the same thing in that sense of you have everything right there for you, but you need to bring in more. And I don't mean to overcomplicate in the sense in zone on the power play where you have guys running all over the place to run these plays that are great, but you need to be adaptable and you need to be able to not only function in your, not your traditional spot, but make it work in other spots. Like, if you watch good power plays in the league over the last couple of years, like, it's more of interchanges in every position compared to, you know, call it 5 years ago, even of like very stagnant power plays where I'm the half wall guy, don't come up here, you stay down on the goal line. Like, they were very standstill, and now, like, standing still is death in this game now. Like, you have to be able to move, you have to be able to adapt and go on the fly and find a new way, like a new hole in the PK. Like, you have to be able to learn on the go and start picking those things apart.
Yeah, and almost you have to be willing to say, okay, after the entry, whatever, it didn't, maybe it didn't go exactly as planned, so all of a sudden we're in a bit of different positions. But again, to have that confidence of, I'm JT Miller, it doesn't matter really what position I'm in, what play can I make, or I'm Elias Pettersson, hey, I don't need to hustle over there to get into my one-timer spot, I can make a play from wherever I am. Again, they have the talent to do that. And it was great to see it start to come to fruition a little bit on the power play last night. You know, some people texting in, hey, it is the Blackhawks. That's fair. But look, you can only beat who's in front of you. And they did that last night.
So I was just still an NHL
still
team.
An NHL team.
Like even the worst player in the NHL would do pretty good over at 8 rinks or whatever it's called now.
They sure would. They absolutely would. There's no doubt about that. All right. You mentioned Elias Pettersson, and now we've gone, like, it's only really 3 games that I think he's started to show that progress, but it has been clearly 3 games of very good progress, I would say. And I thought last night, the play that stands out to me is him, I think in the third period, trying the deke, getting inside, drawing the penalty, right? That is such a hallmark of his game when he's on, is puts defenders in really tough positions and they end up taking a penalty on him. To see that start to come around, you know, I've said this a couple of times today, but it really starts to feel like he's in that zone now where it's just a matter of time before the first goal comes. It's just a matter of time before the assists start to come, because he's involved consistently in not just the play, not just the buildup, but legitimately dangerous scoring chances now. He's involved in a way that he certainly wasn't last year and even through the first 3 games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, like, he had multiple created chances last night. You know, one early to Hoglander, mm-hmm. you know, getting that one through the defenseman. Like, that's a very good chance. He made another one in the second, another one to Hoglander again, I want to say. There was a back door. Like, he's starting to see the game at his pace is what I feel is starting to happen a bit. And I think the most important part of that is, like, his feet have gotten really moving again, and he's starting to put, like, his back into guys' hands, mm-hmm. like, starting to clear a bit of space for himself. And now when he's holding a puck, he's doing it and not just kind of looking around waiting to see something. Like, he's driving yeah. his legs trying to find a
it's
play.
Funny because there's, like, part of the issue you could say with his game earlier was, like, oh, he's not being decisive enough, he's holding on to the puck for too long. But there's also a side of the coin where sometimes he holds on to the puck because he's waiting for the dangerous thing to develop, right? And now it's that more so versus I don't know what to do with this puck right now.
Yeah, and I think the biggest and easiest distinction of the two are, one, he's not moving his feet and looking, and the second is he's moving his feet. And so now, like, when things aren't going well for a scorer or a passer, mm-hmm. the first thing that generally happens is you stop moving your feet, because now you're trying to find your openings, you're trying to find your plays to make. And when things are going for you and you have your confidence and you're on a bit of a point streak, like, you don't do that, because you just keep your feet moving. And it's not that it's, you know, this is going to work. It's just kind of natural where your feet are moving while protecting it. And because you're doing that, well, now everyone else has to move. Something's going to open. And again, like, I can go back to, there's a lot of guys in the league that they can start moving their feet and be looking for that pass, but everything starts moving fast as soon as you yep. get moving, right? And for a guy like Pettersson, as he's starting to get, you know, starting to look more and more like himself, is as the game gets moving, it's what I was saying about Quinn. He was up top trying to get shots through. It's almost the exact same thing. Like, you're moving now, everything kind of just slows down to your pace. Like,
right.
everyone's playing at your level and pace, not you trying to match theirs.
You're dictating versus reacting.
Exactly.
You're pulling the strings and making things
yes.
happen. Yeah.
And that's huge, especially for a forward. Like, you can't rely on other people to find the open ice all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be able to create some of that by causing a bit of chaos in. Well, if you have one guy in your back and you see someone kind of starting to, like, that D coming off the net, well, maybe I'll go closer to the net and pull him farther. Well, maybe Hoglander's open on the backside of him now, right? Like,
yep.
you have to start using the other people's eagerness, like we were talking of the Canucks in their end, like, doing that to the other side as well. And I think that's something that Pettersson can do very well, because he, you know, he is a lot stronger on pucks than people give him credit for. And he looks, because he is a more slender guy, mm-hmm. but, like, he is strong on his edges, and the game can slow down in his to his pace. And I think that could open up some looks for him.
Yeah, that line to me has been pretty consistently dangerous. And, you know, Garland got rewarded last night. We've seen Hoglander get rewarded. It's just a matter of time before it starts to happen for Elias Pettersson. Canucks host the Penguins on Saturday. And, you know, Sidney Crosby is still incredible, an incredible player. But it's a big deal every time they come to town, right? Like, you never know, right? I know he signed the extension and everything, but he only comes to Vancouver once a year. And obviously he's got the history in the building and all of that. Like, is that a big deal for players when you're playing against, like, an all-time great? It's Saturday night, all of that, right? Like, does that enter your mind looking ahead on the calendar to this one on Saturday?
I mean, I feel like it enters everyone's minds in different ways. Like, if it's your first time sharing the ice with Sidney Crosby, you're going to be looking at it much different than Quinn Hughes out there. Like, he's
or
just
Jake
going
DeBrusk
to do his
from
job.
The Eastern Conference or whatever.
Right? Like, they're just, okay, yeah, he's over there. Yeah. We've got to make sure we know where he is. But past that, it's another game. And for the guys that haven't played against him and Malkin and Letang, like, all these guys that, well, especially now, if they're new, that means they're young. Like, they've grown up watching their idols win Stanley Cups. It is one of the weirder feelings to be around. Like, I remember the first time I played against Jágr.
Oh,
one, I couldn't believe how big that
guy
is.
You were like, this guy's still in the league. What
and
the heck?
But I'm lining up next to him as a winger. He's in Florida. And I'm like, I gave like a little push as we kind of got into it. I'm like, there is nothing I can do to this man to get that puck back if he wants to hold it. But, like, you have to get it through your head quickly, too, of, okay, yeah, this is a Hall of Famer here, and this is really, really cool, but I want that puck. Like, I will go through him to get it. Could I have done it? Probably not at that point. But, like, you have to mentally flip that switch really quick. Like, maybe look at him and warm up and be like, oh, this is pretty sick. Like, Crosby's that's awesome. And then start, at least the way I like doing it was, how can I try and have a play against him?
Right.
Like, I want to make sure my stick's the one that breaks up a puck if he's trying to make a move, or I'm hard on him and don't let him out of the corner. Like, it's always funny, too. Like, you think of NHL guys and, you know, like, they're NHL guys. They know what they're doing. And there's nothing really that excites them. But, like, guaranteed there'll be multiple younger guys off this team that after they play him, they're texting their buddies right away because they've already texted, like, oh my God, Crosby walked you, or I can't believe you stripped Crosby. Like, those are things that are still fun.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, it's a job for all these guys, but they played and put this much effort into it because they love it, right? Like, you want to go against the best and see if you can hold him off. Can we hold Crosby off the score sheet tonight?
Was Jágr the one that stands out for you, kind of lining up against a legend?
Yeah, I mean, like, Crosby, like, all of them, but Jágr's just a different one. I'm like, one, you're, like, not that much younger than my dad, and
I was going to say, Jágr's, like, I was just looking at HockeyDB, and Jágr's rookie year was before you were born.
Yep, that makes about sense.
Which is wild.
Yeah, and so I think that's the one, because you're like, this doesn't make any sense to me how he can still be this good.
Yeah.
Like, Crosby was, you know, 8 years into her career
at that point.
And you're like, or 10 years, and you're like, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah.
He's the best player in the league. But yeah, that one was...
Jágr's almost like a mythical creature, right? It was just like, what's going on
here? His style looks so good, and just everything. I'm like, I just want to be him. Let's just be real.
I got to say, your point about how big he is, I remember I saw Jágr live in Montreal when he was with the Rangers, like, the year after the lockout, I think, so like 05-06. And I was just sitting in the stands. I was like, that guy's rear end.
It's insane.
Enormous. I can't believe the way, if when he turns it in and he protects the puck, it's like, who's getting it off him ever?
I fully remember running into a corner because I had, this is funny looking back now, but like, I had him with his, I'll say, his head down a little bit, and I knew he was going to be cutting back. And I'm like, this is my chance. Like, I'm not trying to run him, but like, this is my chance to go hard play, grab the puck. It's going to look great. I sprinted my tiny little body in there and ended up trying to hit him a lot harder than I wanted to. I thought I separated my shoulder. Like, he's just an ox. Like, it was unbelievable.
That's fantastic. Landon, this was awesome, man. Always a pleasure to have you in studio. Excited for the next time we do it. And thanks very much for doing this with us.
Thanks for having me again.
He's Landon Ferraro. I'm Jamie Dodd. Drancher will be back on the show tomorrow here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.